It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this ninth day of April, 2024. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room, the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all times in between and the Great Globe Round. And where, if you pop into the aforementioned merry, wacky, zany right this instant, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers, Irish Dave and Ralphs and Squeaky, and capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist, Chief Mathematician, Bud Trimmer Emeritus, and Zimmergist Extraordinaire, Roger, in Oregon. Hi, I'm Robin. It's Titanic Tuesday, and it's been kind of a, thoughtful Tuesday, retrospective Tuesday. It was a week ago today that we were... Annette and I were running back and forth from the house to the basement and with a big golden retriever and an armload of pissed off kitty cats who just did not understand and didn't want to be there. And that whole thing about herding cats, yeah, it can't be done. Even a can of pate wouldn't have sufficed in the situation. But it's weird because it was... I had a note from Joy in Ann Arbor saying... You know, I've lived through a bunch of those, and, you know, sitting there taking shelter and hanging on to some precious possessions as if the thing wouldn't tear them right from your hands. Anyway, yeah, it's weird. And it's weirder still because, I was talking with my dear sister, Miss Terry, and we know a little bit about tornadoes, having grown up where we did. And... I said, you know, I've lived here since 1988. So, you know, that's 37 years. That's longer than I've lived anywhere else in my life. But she's seen tornadoes. I've seen tornadoes. And the thing is, in the 37 years I've been here, to have a tornado in any given to have a tornado in 10 years... It was shocking. To have two in one day, mind-blowing. And what's beginning to creep me out is the fact that this feels like it may become the new normal because we're already getting, what are we going to call them, advisories? That Thursday may be another, shit storm. And so let's take that into account. Program note. We may have horrible weather here on Thursday, and as we've seen what happened last week, that took us off the air for 2 days between the power going out and the internet going out, and neither of them happening at the same time. We'll add that to the fact that I will not be on the air this coming Monday, the 15th of April. I'll just have to check in periodically to see how jury selection's going in the election interference hush money trial in the Supreme Court of New York in Manhattan. That's the trial court. Well, I hope to be here. I sincerely do. We'll see if I am. That's good news, Roger. We'll leave that right there, but that's good news. Glad you got it. I'm convinced that it's a matter of climate change and, well, leveling the mountains that slowed that crap down. And I hope this isn't a new normal. I am, in a word, too old for this shit. But here we are. And we have lots to talk about on this Titanic Tuesday. But before we do anything else, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So that means we say thank you to Ralphs. Thank you, Ralphs, very kindly. And thank you, James. Thank you. Thank you to Mary Bell. Thank you so very much for being partial sponsors of the program. Where we stand right now is $556. That's 256 of yesterday and 300 of today, and we are in a bill-paying frenzy. I got part of the power bill paid. Now I have to finish paying the rest of the power bill to keep those lovely shareholders at Appalachian Power from being broken-hearted. So hopefully we can knock some of that out. Routes is offering a $25 challenge to get things started, and it would get it. And if it was met, it will get us down to $506 for a tweet from yesterday's eclipse, and it is Ralphs. I love your sense of humor. Hilarious. Who did this? Let's see if this is accompanied by audio doing this on the fly. Okay, I get it. It's Nitwit Nero and Melanoma watching the eclipse from the White House a few years ago. And as the sun reaches totality, it is replaced by the face of Dark Biden.
Is that Joe Biden? This eclipse is totally rigged.
Yeah, and what does Melanoma say? I can't tell. Try looking without your glasses.
You're the sun.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. That's fun. Thanks, Ralphs. So there's a $25 challenge on the table for Dark Brandon in the totality. Like I said, if that's met, we'll get down to $506, and we'll be $206 away from being fully funded for yesterday. Emilio, I wouldn't be surprised if they were. Isn't Appalachian Power a subsidiary of Keebler Orcs, Inc., LLC? Yeah. That would be Little Lilliputian Creeps, LLC, Little Lilliputian Creeps. Anybody? No? Okay. Girl tries. No worries, Steve. No worries. At your leisure, my friend. And so, where to begin? A note. An anniversary. Ron and Raleigh points out, we've arrived at the 30th anniversary of the Rwandan massacre. About 1 million people were hacked to death with machetes and other edged weapons. Around the same time, a genocide was jumping off in Bosnia and Serbia. NATO was Johnny on the spot. When Russia attacked Crimea, we noticed but sat on our hands. But when Russia decided to invade Ukraine, the West decided it couldn't stand. For some reason, not a hand was raised to stop the Rwandan genocide. One of these things is not like the others. Whatever could it possibly be? I know what I think. I also remember in real time as people were calling for intervention to stop it, the claim that it was devilishly difficult to get troops to Rwanda, which may or may not have been true, but the effort would have been nice. And this, also P.S., Ron adds, maybe others in the Horn Family Community Congregation aren't old enough to remember him. Clarence Frogman Henry passed at 87 years of age recently. He was a beloved fixture in the New Orleans music scene and was even set to play the Blues Festival next month. But, yeah, he passed away following back surgery. And he was famous for, he had one huge hit single in which he sang both in a piercingly high falsetto and a low, grumbling, froggy vocal tone, hence the nickname Frogman. And in fact, for those of you who are familiar with the classic 80s film Diner, his hit song appears therein. And God, it was there was a live recording of all people, because we all know I'm a fan. There was a live concert recording of Al Stewart in which he talked about the inspiration that Clarence Frogman Henry had had on him. Go figure. But that's how I came to know about him. First Al Stewart, and then the movie Diner. And may he rest in peace. Ron adding, Keith Olbermann gave a shout out to Joe Flaherty and Count Floyd on his podcast today. How could you not? Blood-sucking monkeys from outer space. Scary stuff. Uniontown, Sweekly. Then they're on Forbes Avenue saying, hey, buddy, you got a quarter? Thanks, Ron. Now, where to begin? Okay, this is a dumb place to begin, but over at the New York Times, they have a thing every day called a feature called The Great Read, saying, on weekdays and Sundays, we recommend one piece of exceptional writing from the Times, a narrative or essay that takes you someplace you might not expect to go. And I saw this one today, and it simply because I complained about it a year or more ago, how Ozempic turned a 1974 hit into an inescapable jingle. The song Pilot by Pilot, Magic, became positively infectious, and we actually had a discussion about it here. On the one hand, I hate it when my DJ brain gets sort of violated by commercializing pop songs, and so I take umbrage at that. But by the same token, if the members of Pilot and the writers of the song actually still maintained the rights to it and didn't have it stolen from them by some shady contract by a record company, then they're getting paid again, I hope, and good for them. But this being Titanic Tuesday, it would be improper not to note right off the top of the program that the good, God-fearing, etc., Christian Republicans out in Arizona stand reinstated a ban on abortion care in that benighted state. You know, if all these maggot states were to actually band together and secede, we could call them the benighted states of America. Sorry. But yes, a statute that was passed in 1864 when Arizona was not a state, because Arizona did not become a state until 1912. So I suppose it was the territorial government. And people who are pregnant and have crisis pregnancies or simply wish not to be pregnant can no longer get any sort of medical care in the state of Arizona, reminding us once again of the second and most important sentence in the dissent to Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health, in which the three dissenting justices wrote, "From the moment of fertilization, a woman has no rights to speak of." No woman had a voice in the passage of that statute. No woman had a voice in its enactment. Just another case of pasty-faced, doughy old white men deciding they know better how women should manage their bodies. Pretty disgusting, really. And hopefully, it blows up in their faces, like it's been blowing up in faces all over the country. The Florida Supreme Court put a 6-week ban in place in Florida. Of course, most women who become pregnant do not know they are pregnant at 6 weeks from conception. But the Supreme Court also said that they would allow a constitutional referendum on the ballot. No word as to whether that will happen, as far as I can tell, from the Arizona court. This was a matter of the Arizona legislature with the Arizona High Court acting in conjunction. They did put the decision on hold for further challenges. And this is bothersome, because this is the real world of women's lives, and it somehow feels gross to say that maybe this is the political leverage we need to drive those Republican maggots back behind the baseboards where they live, because this has real world consequences between now and November 5th, as they have had consequences since the Dobbs decision came down 2 nightmare summers ago, thanks to our most puissant dread sovereign, Supreme Catholic Majesties, and their desire to foist their misogynistic religion upon every woman in this country. It's infuriating. We had the story yesterday about how there have been 26,000 rape pregnancies since Dobbs was handed down in Texas alone. How can that be anything but infuriating? It's past tragic. It is infuriating. And every woman in this country has a right to be past furious. To be retributively angry at every barking, grunting, moaning, shrieking, squeaking, squealing man who has participated in this and the women who have enabled them. We see you, Justice Handmaid. You're not valid. Oh, and before the action was taken in the Arizona Stand Legislature, just for those who are keeping track of the optics, there were literally good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian Republicans literally on the floor in the Arizona Legislature, I'm not kidding, praying in tongues. Barking and grunting. Surprised they didn't bring some snakes with them. Somebody pass me a snake here. I don't think we're getting through to them. Yeah, there's a copperhead. That'll do nicely. Ow! Well, sorry, you didn't have enough faith. You took up the serpent and the serpent took after you. But that was that when that hit the wires today, and it was one notification after another. And just looking at the way the story has been handled in some of the press. The Guardian's reporting, the Arizona Supreme Court upheld an 1864 law. It does sound like Norblappian, doesn't it, Randy Radar? '1864 law banning almost all abortions. The Arizona court gave aggrieved women all of 14 days to sue, to seek injunctive relief. Now, bear in mind, this law was unenforced for decades after Roe v. Wade. What passes for compassion in a 4-2 ruling, the Arizona Maggot Supremes said that it could only be applied prospectively and not retrospectively. The Democratic Attorney General of Arizona, Chris Mays, said, today's decision to reimpose a law from a time when Arizona wasn't a state, the Civil War was raging, and women couldn't even vote will go down in history as a stain on our state. Well, she does at least have the opportunity to engage in a, you know, if she's, it's a matter of courage, and refuse to enforce. In order to get a ballot or a measure on the Constitution, a constitutional amendment, they need 383,923 Arizonans to sign on. And the organizers say they already have more than 500,000 signatures, and they're going to keep going. And if successful,
the measure would state that people in Arizona have a fundamental right to abortion, and that the state cannot and will not seek to curtail that before pregnancy reaches fetal viability. Generally speaking, that's around 24 weeks. Arizona's governor, Katie Hobbs, said today was a dark day for Arizona. And said that people aggrieved by this decision need to do everything in their power to get out and get others to get out and vote. Katie Hobbs has been working all along to try to protect the right to reproductive care and abortion care. Last year, she entered an executive order that banned county attorneys from prosecuting women who seek abortions and doctors who perform them. A reporter said, well, you expect somebody will challenge that now? And she said, bring it on. The president and CEO of Planned Parenthood Arizona, Angela Flores, said, regardless of today's decision, what I can tell you is that our doors will remain open. We will continue to provide what essential health care we can within the limitations of the law, and we hope that supporters will continue to support and that patients will still continue to feel safe in our care. Gabrielle Goodrick is an abortion provider in Phoenix. She said, we're not closing, ever. That's not a question. I have reassurances from the governor and the attorney general that they're not going to prosecute, but I need to investigate that further. Yeah, the loophole there is if you get some asshole sheriff like a Joe Arpaio, and I'm sure they exist in no small number in a place like Arizona, Stan, they can run in and try to get warrants and serve them and try to arrest people, and then that leaves it up to the county, the prosecutors and the attorney general and the governor to say, sorry, we're not doing that. Which would probably wind up with both the attorney general and the governor being impeached by the maggot legislature there, because Arizona, Stan, still has a maggot legislature. That could at least in theory change in November. But like I noted yesterday in yesterday's broadcast, that is 7 long months. They may just blow right by. But for a woman who finds out that she's pregnant during after this 14-day window closes, it can be a hell on earth. But the political reality is abortion measures have not lost since Dobbs. And one hopes that remains, and usually those measures have coattails. Because everyone understands who's pushing this legislative tripe, this garbage. And Flavio with a note, a Paul-o-meter on tilt. What got me was to learn on Rachel Maddow's show last night that the jurists in Uganda are using Dobbs to justify capital punishment for being gay. No, really. Well, of course they are, Flavio. And it's not like that they're just watching the news out of the new 90 states of America, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, forever, in the universe under God. Amen. They're being handed that argument on a silver platter by 501c3 Christian, allegedly Christian, grifts in the United States. Organizations, for instance, if I'm not mistaken, that Mullah Moses Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, has been involved with, are also involved in trying to get nations in Africa like, well, Uganda, Ghana, I think, is another one, to, you know, slaughter the queers and deny essential rights to anyone who's not cis and straight and, of course, Christian, even if being Christian in those countries means that you, as the late, great Bob Lotti once pointed out, practice your Christianity with a rosary in one hand and a dead chicken in the other. It's where we are. But yeah, Flavia. So that. And just a little something in case our sense of dis-ease is not sufficiently ramped up to 11. Well, from Reuters today, goody. This is one of those headlines that just makes you go, oh. UN Nuclear Watchdogs Board sets emergency meeting after Zaporizhia attacks. Well, now, apparently Ukraine and Vladdy Daddy's mother Muscovy are in, a war of words. Blaming each other for drone attacks on the Zaporizhia nuclear facility. The International Atomic Energy Agency noting that drones struck the facility in southern Ukraine this past Sunday, and that one of the drones hit one of the reactor buildings. That's not encouraging. The IAEA has demanded that the attack stop. Mother Russia, of course, said, Ukraine again attack plant with drones for third day. And the government in Kyiv said, no, it wasn't us. What you're doing is you're staging these things to, as false flags. And I'm not going to use the Alex Jones voice. False flag, false flag. If there's any, and this was the whole purpose of the original attack, the entire site is shut down. And, by the way, it is the largest single nuclear power plant in the entirety of Europe. The chairman of the IAEA board told Reuters that both sides had written to him and said, I hereby notify the members of the board that a meeting of the board has been arranged as follows, 3 p.m., 1300 GMT, on Thursday, the 11th of April, 2024. Russia claiming, we want a meeting on recent attacks and provocations of the armed forces of Ukraine. Ukraine said they want to talk about the situation in Ukraine and the safety, security, and safeguards implications. The IAEA is, of course, headquartered in Vienna. And so there will be a meeting, the only problem being that it's unlikely to make clear or sort out at all who's doing what. And so far, the IAEA has sided with Ukraine in this. The board has, since the invasion of 2022, issued four resolutions that condemned Russian aggression against Ukrainian nuclear facilities, most recent one being last month, demanding that Russia withdraw from Zaporizhia. No one has sided with Russia in those resolutions, with the exception of, well, of course, China. Surprised Nitwit Nero hasn't said anything about it. I watched a clip earlier today from yesterday's Daily Show. And frankly, it was a little surprising. It started off nominally as having a good time with the stupidity of people like Marginal Trailer Queen, you know, Sporkfoot, and various and sundry maggots decrying the end of the world within the rapture with the eclipse. What if it happened? Really? And they're all still here.
Uh-oh.
But one of the things... go away. Sorry. Stewie, the studio stink bug, popped by. It's unsettling, I'm sorry. It's just a fact of life in Appalachia, but... And they don't mean to be a pain in the ass. They're the packlids of the bug world. But no, with John Stewart, what was a bit surprising was how hard he came down. And this is going to take a minute or two, but I think the clip is worth hearing. He came down hardest on the United States, but he wasn't exactly kind to our partner in peace, Israel.
How about the free press? Ordinarily, we are strong for a free press.
We also condemn the Russian government's continued targeting and repression of journalists.
You hear that, Russia? We condemn, in no uncertain terms, any repression of a free press. I think you all know what's coming next. More journalists have been killed in Gaza in 6 months than anywhere else in the world, and a new Israeli law says they can ban media outlets they consider a threat.
So as it relates to Al Jazeera, Zero specifically, we've seen the reports. If it is true, a move like this is concerning.
Don't know what we're concerned again. How about if it's true, we condemn it? And by the way, is it true? Like, it feels like you could probably just call someone and be like, is this true? And if they're like, yeah, it's true, you could be like, that's concerning. Not condemning, but concerning. Well, you know what? Perhaps these are just peripheral issues. What about the bedrock rule of international law? No taking land by force. When Russia does it, we're pretty clear.
The entire world has a stake in making sure that no nation, no aggressor, is allowed to take a neighbor's territory by force. The American people will never waver in our commitment to those values.
Ish. See, this is where Israel's actions get interesting. Because you might say Israel's war is different than Ukraine's. Israel's responding to an attack and a hostage crisis. But in the midst of that, they pulled a little something in the West Bank on March 22nd that might be notable.
As the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken made his latest visit to Israel, the Israeli government announced that it was declaring state land, nearly 2,000 acres of land, in the occupied West Bank.
This latest Israeli appropriation is the largest land transfer since the Oslo Accords were signed in 1993.
And that's not even Gaza, that's the West Bank. So you can't say it has anything to do with defending yourself against Hamas. Let's see if America upholds its rule against taking land.
I haven't seen the specifics of this, but anyone taking steps that makes things more difficult, more challenging this time, is something that we have a problem with.
You don't know about it. They did it the day you visited. Why do we tiptoe around on eggshells? They slap America in the face, and our response is, well, if anyone slapped us in the face, it'd be concerning, that's for sure. I mean, raising a hand to a delicate body part of the face, if true. The verbal gymnastics that the American government must undertake so as not to offend the delicate sensibilities of a country we provide most of the weapons for is... Yeah! Every time America tells the world that there's something we won't allow, Israel seems to say, challenge accepted. Are they willfully trying to provoke us? Or perhaps they're just reading our principles from right to left. It's over. It's really, to be honest, it's kind of a bar mitzvah joke, but that's it. Over 30,000 have died in Gaza since the war started. Some of them Hamas soldiers, 13,000 of them children. Our response.
Since the early hours, we've been urging our Israeli counterparts to act with as much precision as they can in their targeting. Our constant efforts to urge the Israelis to be as precise and careful as possible, we can still continue to urge Israel to be more careful and more precise. The need for the Israeli Defense Forces to act with precision, we continue to work with the Israelis to make sure that they are as precise as they can be.
See, they're not listening. Have you tried synonyms for precision?
We continue to stress to our Israeli counterparts that they be as discriminate and careful in their targeting as possible. Be as cautious and deliberate and as careful as they can. To be more careful and more deliberate. Be very deliberate. In the most discreet, deliberate, careful, cautious way possible. The utmost care.
And a special burden, to be mindful.
To be mindful? What is this, hot yoga? We just, you know, we've seen the bombing and we are urging Netanyahu to be present. What the f*** are we doing here? The subtext of all this is America knows this is wrong, but it apparently doesn't seem to have the courage to say it in a straightforward manner. America and Israel both know that you cannot bomb your way into safety. We learned that lesson in Iraq and Afghanistan. They learned it in southern Lebanon. They laid siege there, occupied the southern area for 20 years. All it did was birth and strengthen Hezbollah. And they're about to do it all over again, and we are letting them. Real friends take the f***ing keys, because friends don't let friends bomb that much. And after this recent week, with so much horror, perhaps America finally finds the need for a new approach with Israel, with more justice and less cruelty.
The U.S. and Israel are closing in on what would be their largest weapons deal since the war in Gaza began.
Well, I don't know about you, but if that's true, I find it concerning. And with that...
And everything he said is true. The problem is, it is not by any stretch of the imagination limited to this administration. Since 1948, this country has bowed and scraped and humiliated itself in choosing the Israeli side over the Palestinians, with no pretense of equality, no pretense of listening to both sides. It has been the policy of the United States, let's see, 1948, that would be the Truman administration, the Eisenhower administration, the Kennedy administration, the Johnson administration, the Nixon administration, the Ford administration, the Carter administration, the Reagan administration, the Pappy Bush administration, the Clinton administration, the Dim Leader administration, the Obama administration, the Nitwit Nero administration, and the Biden administration. I'm counting on my fingers, but that is 14 administrations. And they have all been, with a couple of exceptions, you know, bless his heart,
and I mean that in the good way, God love him, and I mean that in the good way, Jimmy Carter, who looked at that old terrorist Menachem Begin, remember, he was a member of the Irgun, emphasis on the word goon, and looked at Anwar Sadat and said, you fuckers are going to sit down and you're going to make peace. And it's the only meaningful peace that's been had over there. But it made a big difference. But in the meantime, it didn't matter if it was a Republican or a Democrat. If the Israelis wanted to shoot the knees out of Palestinian teenagers in the West Bank or Gaza, the ho-hum. If the Israelis wanted to attack a United States Navy ship flying the United States flag and claim they thought it was Egyptian and kill 37 or so American service members, ho-hum. If the Israelis wanted to run over a peace activist named Rachel Corrie, ho-fucking-hum. And all I can hope is that maybe we're finally getting to a place where we don't do that anymore. And I realize, hope in one hand and in the other, and see which one fills up first. God, God, God. Still, it's, I don't know, encouraging is too strong a word. To see someone like Jon Stewart, admittedly, going after the Biden administration, but finally finding his voice to speak up against things that are absolute atrocities and will, in time, with unfortunately the benefit of hindsight, be recognized as the war crimes and the crimes against humanity that Israel is committing. So, what, watch this space, I guess? But I was kind of surprised. And, of course, they did a good job at the Daily Show because they couched it. A spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, the medicine go down, the medicine go down. Yes, a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down in the most delightful way. Because they had a real good time with the eclipse and the Republican stupidity thereover. And then got to the reality. Going back to the question of 6-week abortion bans, Ron and Raleigh, 6 weeks? I may not be the sharpest katana in the scabbard. Well, wait a minute, Ron. I don't think we've ever had a katana in the scabbard reference before. But will someone tell me, if a woman doesn't know she's pregnant at 6 weeks, how will the jackbooted natal police know how far along a woman is asking for a clairvoyant friend? Well, that's the point, Ron. If a woman can scarcely know she's pregnant at 6 weeks, then we do know, these maggots know for a fact, that the minute she does know she's pregnant, it's too damn late. Now, a 6-week zygote embryo, I mean, has it even reached sea monkey stage at that point? But that's what matters, Ron. The fact that by the time the woman knows, it's too late for the woman to do anything about it. And worse than that, the women who are coming forward, the ones who wanted their babies, mothers who already had children or were ready for a second one or a third one, and found out that there was something desperately wrong with the child, the fetus, and still can't get any help. Because again, these bills
are nothing, these laws are nothing but religious sadism. It has nothing to do with anyone's well-being and everything to do with men controlling women's bodies and using the vulgar vehicle of religion to do it.
I mean, it certainly strikes me as being what's at hand here. Clarence with a note, Africa and Christianity. The Christian missionary movement has a massive impact on the poor, uneducated people of many African countries. The American and European religion industrial complex uses Africa for a testing ground of extreme theological beliefs. The only hope for those who follow the religious diatribe is that it gets better after they die, when they go to heaven. Yeah, they've been selling that in Europe, and particularly in the Americas, and certainly in Africa and Asia, for as long as they've been at it. I remember the great songwriter and poet of the labor movement, Joe Hill, who of course was murdered in the name of the state and capitalism, wrote once a song. And Joe Hill, by the way, was raised by a mother who was a devotee of the Salvation Army, which last I checked is still homophobic and transphobic as hell. Never mind. But he said, pray and pray, live on hay, day by day. There'll be pie in the sky when you die. Yeah, it's real shitty down here, but thank God the streets are going to be paved with gold and the gates are going to be made with pearls when you're not alive anymore. Still amazes me that something as simple as the fear of death can imbue a person with a willingness to believe that they will have a consciousness after they die. Go figure. But you're right, Clarence. That's a great line. A testing ground of extreme theological beliefs. And every time an LGBTQ person's life is threatened in a hellhole like Uganda, well, here in Merca, well, a fundamentalist Christian gets a little stiffy. Yeah, exactly, Ralph's like the couple in the new Biden ad that I ran last night. Yeah, exactly like that. Those stories have repeated time after time after time in these maggot states. Women coming near death, women being maimed, being sterilized because they had to let their bodies wreck them before they could have a medical intervention on a baby in utero that was not going to make it. I know people, I know women who have had to carry dead fetuses or fetuses that were not going to be viable at birth. And the heartbreak doesn't stop with the news. The realization, the heartbreak continues years and years after. And the fact of the matter is, and it's proof of how little men understand the working of women's bodies. The mother-to-be need not do anything wrong. Just as not every acorn that falls from an oak tree becomes another oak tree, just that every cicada that emerges after 13 or 17 or 24 years and begins singing its reproductive song doesn't get to reproduce because, well, there's cicada wasps out there. Every human pregnancy does not result in a human birth. Try explaining that to a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christian man. Because the fundamental thing here is that to Christian men, the only purpose women have on earth is to pop out babies after they've been obliged to let the aforementioned Christian men rut all over them. It's sick, really, when you get right down to it. And the fact that the motivating force here is Christianity just reinforces how vulgar the most elemental and fundamentalist iterations of that faith are. Because, again, not all Christians, but plenty of them, without a doubt. Note coming in from Cynthia. Hey, Cynthia, just back from the grocery store. And mention this, with you having mentioned that, I have to tell you something. So I don't know where you shop, but in my Kroger's, they get these vacuum-sealed, see where I'm going, flat iron steaks. And a flat iron steak is a cut from the chuck, and it is the second tenderest piece of beef, second only behind filet or tenderloin. But they come vacuum-sealed. And I checked it out, and it's all BPA-free. And so after having first conferred with Brother Deacon Asa, I did a little experiment on Sunday. I took one of those, because I caught it on the manager's... I haunt the manager's special, okay? I just do. I've got a friend in Kroger's who lets me know. But anyway... I caught one of these flat iron steaks. It was almost exactly a pound. And I set the sous vide machine for 125 degrees at an hour and 15 minutes. And just after having rinsed the packaging and everything, just popped it right down in the pot once it got to 125 degrees and an hour and 15 minutes later, pulled it out. Split it open, the packaging, perfect. Perfect. So I don't know if you can get those vacuum-sealed flat iron steaks, but it's relatively small, and it's a perfect meal for one, Cynthia, or two. Makes beautiful steak sandwiches or steak frites, those kind of things. I covered it in Montreal steak seasoning and then got my griddle just absolutely blazing hot, seared it on both sides, got a gorgeous crust. Brother Deacon Asa was impressed. So maybe put that on your list. But Cynthia says, just back from the grocery store, and while in the store, I decided to treat my chocolate cravings with some nice dark chocolate bars. Yum, yum. And among the offerings was some delicious-looking, nice, and attractively packaged chocolate from Uganda. I didn't buy it. I bought other offerings instead. I don't need to tell you why. I think we know. Otherwise, it's going to be a nice sunny day here tomorrow, and I'm going to pull out the smoker again, atta girl, and try smoking some salmon for my second smoke. I'll do ribs again, too, as my neighbor would like to try them. And besides, who knows what next year is going to bring, so I'm going to enjoy this year as best I can. Oh, Cynthia, living well is the best revenge. And shoot me a note, and if you want to, we'll go over the... Well, we'll go over Brother Deacon Ace's method for smoking salmon, and you'll be astonished. It's absolutely wonderful. You'll need some eggs. You'll need a big box of kosher salt or two. And I like dill and lemon. Montreal steak seasoning. Did I say city? I didn't say city. I said seasoning. Emilio, don't. It's like Joan Crawford said when she stepped into her first board meeting at Pepsi. Don't fuck with me, fellas. So, you know, you got several options there and several opportunities coming in the coming year to live well as the best revenge, Cynthia. You got your smoked salmon. You got your ribs, which you've already got down. And you've got the flat iron steak, which is just a great way to do a small cut of beef for you and your neighbor, whatever. It could be worth looking for. Of course, the Ma and Pa Crumbly went to prison today. They up in Michigan. They're the ones who raised the little, well, who raised Ethan Crumbly, who took the Sig Sauer 9mm pistol that Ma and Pa had gotten him for his birthday and went to school and decided to waste some classmates. Murdered them, slaughtered them, and maimed some. In a test of negligence law in Michigan, they were both convicted, and they were both sentenced to up to 15 years each in the state prison system of Michigan. They will, as I understand it, have to serve a minimum of 10. Flavio noting the parents effectively groomed the kid, and as a friend of mine put it aptly, oh, and please do not forget, the scoundrels went on the lam betraying a conscience of guilt. Flavio says 10 to 15 years is not enough. I got the same sentiment from Micah up in Michigan. She said, it ain't enough, but it'll do. For my part, given the lackluster handling of firearms negligence in this country, 15 years is a lot. 10 to 15 years is a lot. I mean, think about it. That's them getting out of prison somewhere between 2034 and 2039. Imagine how much the world will change in that period of time and how much they will age. Prison is not a place to grow old. And I doubt that they will be well received. When I saw the news of the sentencing, I thought back to a case coming out of Kentucky many years ago in which Daddy had bought a 22 rifle or a 410, you know, kid size for his child. I think the little boy was 4 and his baby sister was 1 or 2. And this was in rural Kentucky, Stan. And the kid got his birthday rifle out and plugged his sister with it, and she died. And when asked, the high sheriff of the county said, no, I don't reckon we're going to be charging the parents with nothing. They done had a horrible, horrible tragedy, and we don't need to add none to it. Remember that? That's just one. You got kids plugging kids all over the country. You got the literal rocket scientist who on the day after Christmas went to the after Christmas sale at the Wally World somewhere in Idaho, Stan. And of course, it's not safe to go to the Wally World in Idaho without carrying a Freedom Protector in your purse, because it's a dangerous world out there, especially in a place like Idaho, Stan. A lot of Mormons in Idaho, Stan. They're a desperate lot. And she was She was browsing the racks in Walmart when her little toddler reached in the purse, pulled out her freedom protector, and blew mommy away. Lots of those cases. You know, firearms just kind of idly left about, loaded, you know, because you never know when the forces of evil and darkness are going to come barreling through the front door, and you're going to, or maybe, depending on your mindset, you're going to have to be able to haul out your weapon and go and square up toe to toe with the federales as they try to put their jackbooted jackboots on the back of your Christ loving neck, where you got the tattoo that says only God can judge me. And nothing ever happens. But the point is, in the case of the Crumblies, something happened. And for the fact that something happened, you know, the right wing loves to talk about the deterrent effect of the criminal law. I'm not sure if there's a criminal law in this country that has a deterrent effect. Because people seldom commit crimes because they think they're getting by with something. That people commit crimes because they are desperate, dumb. Desperate and dumb. Mean comes in a lot too. Behavioral health issues play a role. But if they can make the deterrence argument, so can we. So maybe Ma and Pa Crumbly can serve as a deterrent to other parents who want to leave their freedom protectors just laying around in case they got to reach for it in a hurry like. I mean, you got to think about it. You got your Second Amendment remedies there, the key to your very constitutional freedoms here in your America, in your new 90 states of America, and you got it locked up in a safe, and they're coming through the door, and you got to go to the safe, and you got to remember the combination with all that going on around you, and is it left 22 or right 22 and left 13? And you're flounging, and you're trying to get your freedom protector out, and dang it, your whole family's done dead, because them sissy panty waist liberals done wanted you to keep your guns safe to keep your youngins from blowing away your other youngins, or you. And there you are. And as Carl Malden said all those years ago in those American Express ads, what will you do? What will you do? Only he was talking about cash being stolen on an overseas trip. Not having your guns all locked up where you can't get at them. But that's how they think, you know? That is how they think. Oh, and Cynthia replying, I'll keep my eyes open for that Flatiron steak. I've not seen it at my local store, but you never know. It's not like I've been looking for it either. Your result sounds fabulous. Do go over that salmon smoke recipe when you can work it in, though. I'll try and take notes. Otherwise, it's still a learning experience for me. Okay, let's do this. We're into the second hour of the program. By the way, fundraising goal stands at $556. If Ralph's Dark Biden Eclipse Challenge is met, we'll be down to $506. So if anybody's got $25 laying around, Ralph's would dearly love to double it for you. And Ralph's is so kind to be there. And she always makes a point of tying it to something at least humorous, if not outright delightful, and that was delightful when Dark Brandon appeared inside the totality. Basically, what the salmon thing boils down to, there's no boiling, Cynthia. You'd have to tell me that, so I figured I'd pass along. You take your plank of salmon. I assume you're going to use a plank. I don't mean the wood, but, you know, a whole fillet. And you rinse it and you pat it dry. And I like to use the tray that it comes on just because it's the tray in which it's presented. And clean that off, rinse it too, and then put on a nice layer. Well, no, back up, Roxanne. take a box of kosher salt. Crack two or three eggs and separate the whites from the yolks. Do whatever you want with the yolks. It's the whites we're after here. Beat the whites together. Add the whites into the salt. Make it kind of pasty. Lay down a layer in the tray. Put the salmon on it with the skin side down. And then take your, slice your lemon paper thin and your dill weed and put it over the top of the salmon on the meat side. And then with the remaining salt and egg white paste, completely encase it. And then put it, cover it in plastic and put it in the fridge for, oh, 2, 3, 4 hours. Overnight works. It's not going to make the fish salty. Build your fire in your smoker, low and slow. You don't want to get much over 200 degrees if you even get to that. Your best smoking wood for salmon is alder. You should be able to find it. When you've got your low, slow fire going, put your alder on. It sounds perilously like a planet in the Star Wars universe. Put the salmon on the smoker, close things up, make sure it stays low and slow, and leave it in there for 2 hours tops. And then when you take it out, let it rest. And then go and rinse off all the salt and the egg and everything. And you will have a perfect piece of smoked salmon. Actually, I just screwed up. You take all the salt casing off and then you put the salmon on. You don't want the salt casing on while you're smoking. That's how it gets smoked. But that having been said, all the fishiness will be gone and you'll just have this tender, flaky, beautiful coral to pink smoked salmon and my heavenly days on a bagel with a schmear and some thin sliced red onion and some thin sliced tomato and some capers and, you know, sour cream instead of the schmear if you want. You're going to be a happy girl, Cynthia. Happy girl indeed. So, there's that. Well, hi, George. George in Coarse Gold. Walmart hazards. You never know when you might be attacked by wild boars in the grocery aisle. I know, 37 to 52 wild boars, right, George? Yeah. Here's one more, says Clarence. In Philly this past weekend, a 3-year-old shot herself in the eye. She picked up a gun her guardian was supposed to be cleaning. The little girl ended up dying. My question is, who cleans a loaded gun? Just asking. Who goes to clean a gun? Well, I mean, somebody didn't know. There are some pistols that are deliberately designed. Most of them have a safety feature where they will not fire with a round in the chamber and the magazine out. Not all pistols are that way. But someone had a round in the chamber, Clarence. And, well, they forgot to clear it. Most semi-automatic pistols now actually have a little window where the ejector is, and you can actually see the round sitting down in there. Human error. God, that's so sad, Clarence. Flavio says, what if you like fishy? How do you smoke salmon but keep some of the fishiness? Just don't do the egg thing. Just rinse it off real well, season it however you want, and put it on the, then it'll be plenty fishy. Sorry. I take my fish oil. I'd rather not taste it. Oh, hi, Charlene. Charlene in Rogues Island, a founding member of the sorority of Lean, says, I'll meet the Dark Brandon Challenge, and if somebody will match my $25, I'll add another $25. So, okay, so Charlene, that gets us down to $506. And if somebody else has $25, Charlene will then double that, and we'll be down to $456, and it'll only be $156 from being funded for yesterday. That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Charlene. That's so kind. And so Ralph's challenge is met. Thank you for the challenge, Ralph. The Dark Brand, the totality of Dark Brandon challenge. Emilio says, "Beat the whites, eh?" Web talker and reverse racist threatens patriotic Trump supporters with violence. Give those whites a thorough beating. Oh, okay. This will have to wait till next time, Cynthia says, as I don't have eggs handy and won't be going back to the store for a while. Well, if you're in West Virginia, you could just walk down the road and get some eggs from your neighbor because we are crawling with chickens around here. They actually began to roost yesterday afternoon, even though the eclipse wasn't visible. It got darker, it got cooler, and then once the eclipse was over, the rooster that is the bane of my existence stood right under my window and began crowing at the dawning of a new day. It's not the sharpest rooster. I checked, and I think he's got like a tiny little, he wears tiny little rooster Velcro claw covers. Never mind. But he does, anytime it clouds up and then the clouds part, yeah, he's there. He's under the window. Cock-a-doodle-doo! You don't want to know my response. Oh, Clarence, thank you. Clarence just responded to Charlene's challenge, so yay, look at us. We're down to 456. So $156 away from being fully funded for yesterday. Thank you, Clarence. That's wonderful. Randy Radar says, according to the Orange Menace, immigrants are going to come through suburban windows. The only way I believe that that's going to be the case for me is if the government's going to send someone to do that. Don't give the maggots any ideas, Randy Radar. Just don't do that. It's not wise. That Biden abortion ad, Flavio said earlier, this is a tremendously moving ad, but we assume maggots have feelings, compassion like us. Biden should make a separate ad for those whose heartstrings can't be tugged at, wherein the couple gets the astronomical medical bill for trying to save a person who goes into sepsis two times. Well, they won't care about that either, Flavio. They don't care about anything. They're deeply and emotionally compromised. Their brains, their minds have been harmed by constant exposure to things like Fox and Newsmuck and Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground, and, well, the maggots themselves and the people who think that Sporkfoot is a genuine stateswoman. God. This is interesting. Since we were talking about Gaza and Palestine. Story comes from Reuters. Penny Wong is the foreign minister of Australia, and she said the government in Canberra is considering recognition of a Palestinian state. She gave a speech earlier this evening, Australia time, And she aligned herself with comments by the Foreign Minister David Cameron of the UK, who said recognizing a Palestinian state, including the United Nations, would make a two-state solution irreversible. Foreign Minister Wong said, internationally, the community is discussing Palestinian statehood, quote, as a way of building momentum towards a two-state solution. Speaking at the Australian National University, she said a two-state solution is the only hope to break the endless cycle of violence. Israel, meanwhile, is barking and grunting. In opposition to what it's calling the unilateral recognition of Palestinian statehood, and said that the Israelis somehow must be consulted on whether Palestinians can have a state. I don't think it works like that. Spain is also considering recognition of a Palestinian state, and they've been a prime mover of the idea within the European Union. And Penny Wong said there's no role for Hamas in a few... Hamas? Really? Hillbilly much, Roxanne? There's no role for Hamas in a future Palestinian state. Agreed. There's no role for Iran in a future Palestinian state. And, of course, I have no doubt whatsoever that if a Palestinian state were to be recognized and they had somehow managed to build a building or two back from what's been destroyed, they will, you know, the day that the state was acknowledged and recognized, Israel would go to war with them. There is an execution planned today. And the governor of Missouri, Mike Parson, has denied clemency to a man named Brian Dorsey due to be murdered in the name of the people of Missouri today. Brian Dorsey, himself a murderer. He was wasted out of his mind on drugs when he committed his murders. He went on death row in 2008, Brian Dorsey did. He entered a guilty plea to killing his cousin Sarah Bonney and her husband Ben Bonney. Happened in central Missouri. None other than, golly Moses, what does this say? 70 members of prison staff have pled for Brian Dorsey not to be murdered in the name of the state of Missouri. I mention this story because he has 36 minutes and 9 seconds left in his life. The former warden of the prison where he is says that Dorsey should not be executed. He has not had a single write-up since entering the prison in 17 years on death row. Cousins of the murder victims have said his life should be spared. At the time of the murders, he was in a psychotic state. He hadn't slept for 72 hours. He was on a crack bender. He was cracked out of his mind. And again, he pled guilty. His lawyers also say that he received ineffective assistance of counsel, which is not at all surprising if he had a public defender in the state of Missouri. I have some private knowledge from someone who worked within that system who said that it is a complete disaster. At the time of trial, no one mentioned to the jury that he was in a drug-induced psychosis. And for a capital case of this magnitude, his appointed lawyers were paid the grand total, lawyers, of $12,000. The director of the Missouri State Public Defender System, one Mary Fox, said those kinds of flat fees discourage thorough work and encourage lawyers to just mail it in. Supporting the challenge, Mary Fox said, Missouri State Public Defender acknowledges the prevalence of unconstitutional and ineffective assistance of counsel on death penalty flat fee cases. Flat fees are also a violation of the American Bar Association guidelines as well as the Missouri Rules of Professional Conduct. The ABA had previously said, before the crime was even committed, counsel in death penalty cases should be fully compensated at a rate that is commensurate with the provision of high-quality legal representation and reflects the extraordinary responsibilities inherent in death penalty representation. As far back as his childhood, Brian Dorsey was diagnosed with a major depressive disorder. Medication served no help. In a way, you could say that Brian Dorsey was a little bit like Ethan Crumbly in that regard. And people with untreated mental health and behavioral health issues, and we have professionals in the community who can attest to this, knowing they're having problems, will seek to solve those problems by any means they can reach. And in Brian Dorsey's case, he self-medicated with drugs. And I haven't seen anything about him getting a reprieve from the Supreme Court and the bloodthirsty maggot governor of Missouri, Stan, has said, I don't care what anybody thinks. I won't kill him. Hell, if they'd let me, I'd kill him myself. Because that's how these maggots are. One of the lawyers for Brian Dorsey said, Governor Parson has chosen to ignore the wealth of information before him, showing that Brian Dorsey is uniquely deserving of mercy. Brian has spent every day of his time in prison trying to make amends for his crime, and dozens of correctional officers have attested to his remorse, transformation, and commitment to service. Brian's unprecedented support and his irrefutable evidence of redemption are precisely the circumstances for which clemency is designed. But you see, a governor in Missouri, Stan, has to be tough on crime. And maggots being maggots, if they could desecrate the body, they would gladly do it. I think maggots being maggots, I think some of them would probably chew on his flesh. Because that is who they are. God. Minutes and 15 seconds. What else? Because we are at the halfway point of the program. Okay, so yesterday we talked about the papal bullshit. Dignitas Infinita. That said, the same way the Holy Mother Church said to Galileo, no, you got it all wrong. The sun revolves around the earth. Probably got a bad case of demons there, Galileo. Well, they've also declared that you can't change sex. Because Holy Mother Church says so. Now, I need you to understand, I'm not trying to just beat on this story some more. There's actually a good reason for this. I saw the article today, transgender Catholics say new Vatican document shows no understanding of their lives. Well, surprise, 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 Sergeant Carter, imagine that. Bunch of old men running around in lace dresses and House of Whoville hats don't understand what it is to be trans. I'll be dipped. David Crary at Associated Press authored the story, writing, transgender Catholics, as well as a priest who welcomes them to his parish, expressed disappointment Monday with a new Vatican document rejecting the fundamental concept of changing one's biological sex. Yada, 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 yada. The new document never uses the word transgender, which troubled Michael Sennett, a transgender man who is involved with an LGBTQ plus ministry at St. Ignatius of Loyola Church in Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts. Avoiding the word transgender speaks to limiting the dignity of transgender people, Sennett said via email. If the church is unable to name us or acknowledge our true selves, they can't possibly engage us pastorally, even if that is the goal. To which I say, why are you messing around with any of the Abrahamic religions? It ain't nothing but, they got nothing for us. I mean, Sennett made good points time and again. Studies have validated the negative impact on trans people, youth, and adults who are denied affirming care. Transitioning is not a medical agenda out to recruit people. It's a lifeline. And there's Christine Zuba, a trans woman from New Jersey. And she said transgender persons are being condemned for who we are, and more importantly, we become subject to potential harm. It again, sadly, gives fuel to those who continue to desire our existence. We exist, but we do not. We have dignity, but we do not. I don't even want to think about what the religious and political right will make of this. Nonetheless, Christine Zuba said that Pope Frank is a good and a holy man. Okay, Christine. It mentions, and this is why I even bothered with the story, because of the way my poor little brain works. David Crary writes, the Catholic Church in the U.S. is not monolithic on transgender policies. Some dioceses have issued stern guidelines, in effect forbidding acknowledgement of gender transitions, but some parishes have welcomed trans people, including the Church of Our Lady of Grace in Hoboken, New Jersey. Its priest, Reverend Alexander Santora, invited Christine Zuba a few years ago to deliver part of the homily at its annual Pride Mass. And that's why I'm sharing the story, because of how my brain works. The Church of Our Lady of Grace in Hoboken? Ooh, I'm dying again. There's a Warner Brothers cartoon line for everything. That's the one where Bugs has been trying to save the little penguin from the penguincidal killers. And penguins is practically chickens. And Bugs busts his ass to get the little fella down to Antarctica where he can be free and happy, where penguins, you know, live. And he gets down there, and the little penguin finally hands him his card, and it says, "Come and see the penguin in Hoboken, New Jersey." Which then engenders, see what I did there? Bugs to declare, "Hoboken! Ooh, I'm dying again!" What is it about Hoboken that's funny? Why did the creators of those brilliant little 7.5-minute shorts turn Hoboken, where I've never been, into something that, in a story as serious as that, can make me stop and say, "Hoboken?" Yeah. Oh, and let's go from Hoboken to Wisconsin. Just a reminder of how dumb and stupid the maggots can be. A Wisconsin state representative, this happened some time back, but it's still worth the mention. A maggot by the name of Chuck Wichgers. A maggot from Muskego. Opposed a bill making contraception birth control pills an over-the-counter purchase with the following words. "Nature has an intention, and when you have that act, when pregnancy," he sounds Canadian, doesn't he? "Naturally occurs, that's nature doing what nature does." He actually said this inside the Wisconsin State Assembly. The woman then has to counter nature by taking something that's highly systemic and highly invasive, according to the documents and the books that people are pro the pill stated in their books. That's science. We would begin to see ourselves as the ultimate masters of nature. So when nature does something it's supposed to do, and then we say, let's not do that, we're talking about not getting a pimple if you eat Doritos and eat chocolate. That would be contrary to a health movement or nature. At that point in time, everybody was just looking around the room going, what's he even talking about? And another maggot said, shut up, he's on a roll. This is another one of those demon-haunted world-type dudes. At a Toilet Paper USA event in Madison a couple of years earlier, Wichgers said, pointing to the walls of the state capital of Wisconsin, which is a lovely place, by the way, and I love Madison. "And when it comes to this building, there's demons in those walls. The only way they go away is by prayer. That's the only way. And when you're not here, those demons are laughing at you for not being here. They're saying, go away, we'll give you the laws you want, and we'll violate the Ten Commandments, and we'll do whatever it takes to make you guys think you're happy." Jesus, save me from your followers. Since we've been talking about guns, Clarence, here's one more for you. You saw mine and raised me, the three-year-old in Philly. I'll see your three-year-old in Philly and raise you a 13-year-old in Phoenix. It was Sunday, day before yesterday in Phoenix, when some kids were playing with Nerf guns. Earl Rick Reynolds and Adolfo Villalva were playing with Nerf guns Sunday afternoon near 7th Avenue and Hatcher Road in Phoenix. Did you hear the Nerf guns part? Yeah. One of them wasn't a Nerf gun. Adolfo Villalba, 18, said that he actually picked up a real gun and mistakenly fired the gun at the 13-year-old little boy. Villalba and others then moved Reynolds to the apartment complex. That's Ulrich Reynolds. The apartment complex's parking lot, and Villalba hid the firearm before officers arrived on scene. And the little Reynolds guy died at the hospital. He told the cops that his mom, Villalba did, that his mom keeps a gun under the seat of her car, and that he put it in his pocket because it looked cool, and said he was playing with the real gun and the Nerf gun at the same time when he accidentally used the wrong one. Because freedom. Because, God forbid, we should give the pasty-faced, doughy gun humpers pause to maybe make sure that the guns are in a safe place. You know, where they can't be mistaken for a Nerf gun. You ever seen a Nerf gun? I have. You ever seen a real gun? I have. You can't mistake a Nerf gun for a real gun. Something going on here. Yeah? Oh, by the way, lines are open. If you'd like to engage in any conversation, you're more than welcome to. The stress line is, of course, 844. Where'd that come from? 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. You can reach via Skype at Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Kincaid Horn, K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, on Skype. And there's 304-574-8178, which also comes into the same place. And well, pick one, and we'll be conversing happily away. Randy Radar going back to Hoboken. Ah, says Randy, it's like Hackensack. Okay. Great place names. At the beginning of W.C. Fields' The Bank Dick. Lompoc. And, of course, the running gag of Cucamonga. Oh, I know. Irish Dave says, today's Hoboken fun fact, the birthplace of Frances Albert Sinatra, son of Dolly. She worked as a midwife and, according to Sinatra biographer Kitty Kelly, ran an illegal abortion service that catered to Italian Catholic girls, for which she was named Hatpin Dolly. Oh, dear God. Oh, who did that? Ralph's just sent me a picture. A little bit ago. A German shepherd sitting with a human leg bone, or what appears to be a human leg bone. It's probably a cow bone. But someone has either obtained or photoshopped a Trump sneaker onto it. And Fritz looks quite happy with his... Jesus. Where do you find this stuff, Ralphs? And, of course, the fallout from yesterday continues. Naturally, this story occurs in Florida. It involves a Georgia woman, however. Talen Nichelle Celestine got on westbound I-10 in Holmes County, Florida. She'd spent the night in a local hotel. This was yesterday. According to WTVY-TV, when she left the hotel in Holmes County, she told the desk clerk and whatnot she was going to go on a shooting spree. Because God told her to. Probably should have saved this for tomorrow. And so she went on to I-10 and opened fire on another driver. According to Florida Highway Patrol, she fired multiple rounds into another vehicle. The driver was struck by glass fragments and grazed on the arm by a bullet. But he managed to maneuver his vehicle onto the shoulder of the road. So far uncaught, 22-year-old Ms. Celestine kept heading westbound, then shot at another vehicle, hit the driver in the neck, and that individual was taken to a hospital for treatment. And then the troopers responded to the shooting. They stopped her. They searched her purple Dodge Challenger, where they found an AR-15 and a 9mm handgun. She's apparently in the clink now on charges of attempted murder, aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, and improper discharge of a firearm. That one really matters in Florida. You think, just out of curiosity, do you think Talen Nichelle Celestine was maybe having some behavioral health issues? You see, this is where I get confused. If, for instance, the former Vice President of the United States says that he hears voices and that the voice is God, and then people say, is it okay that we got a Vice President who hears voices? How dare you criticize me for my faith? You're oppressing me for my Christianity. But then you get Talen Nichelle Celestine, who also hears the voice of God in her head, and takes a gun and decides to shoot people because God told her to off some folks because eclipse. Can I get a little help sorting this out? Where's the cutoff? Is it the because eclipse part? Or is it the because not shooting at anybody yet part? Or is it because Talen Nichelle Celestine is black? Because, see, when Mike Pence hears voices, they cause him to do things like attack the rights of women. They cause him to do things like try to put laws in place that make women bleed to death. And endure sepsis when a pregnancy goes wrong. Perhaps even die when that happens. Right? Talen Nichelle Celestine, while she hit somebody in the neck and grazed somebody in the arm, didn't kill anybody, mercifully. But she and Mike Pence and, well, I mean, come on, the current Speaker of the House of Representatives will tell anybody who cares to listen that he hears voices in his head, too, and the voice he hears tells him that he's actually Moses. Good God, and he thinks you can't change gender? But you can change anthropological ages? I mean, there's old Mike Mullah Johnson wandering around trying to impose his theocratic Christian will on everybody else in America. And the next thing you know, he's hearing voices and he thinks he's a Bronze Age hero who can part seas and the like. And threaten kings with rivers of blood and frogs and locusts and pestilence and call down the angel of death and shit like that. I sincerely cannot tell. I can't see where the break point is. Yeah, you know, it's like asparagus. You know, you take fresh asparagus, and some parts of it are not edible, so you bend it, and it will break exactly at the place that's not where the not tender part starts, and you either simmer those for broth or something, but, you know, then you got to. And so you've established what the break point is on the asparagus. I can't find it with these Christian fundamentalists. Can you? Is it the fact that Mike Pence and Mullah Moses Mike Johnson are wealthy enough that they can buy the consent of people who say, well, you know, I mean, they're Christian, they hear voices. But Taylan Nichelle Celestine isn't wealthy enough? I mean, Purple Dodge Challenger, I'm impressed. AR-15, 9mm handgun, 22 years old? Probably got a halfway decent job somewhere. But I'm sort of at a loss. Go to any Southern Baptist service. What? Well, you know, God told me the other day. Did he? You sure it was God? Was he speaking Aramaic? You know, the God that told Abram to take up his family and leave Ur of the Chaldees, he wasn't even speaking Aramaic. He was probably speaking Urdu or whatever. I don't know. I sincerely don't know. Just don't. And not at all regular, but probably deserves to be a feature. I call this, don't call the cops. No, really. Well, where'd it go? Oh, got it. Oh, there, yeah, there's one. There it is. Story comes out of Tenistan. A Hamilton County Tenistan deputy named Daniel Wilkie pulled over a motorist and what followed was multiple lawsuits and 44 criminal charges. And the case went all the way to the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, who wrote the following. The case arises from a traffic stop that ended like no other of which we are aware. Deputy Daniel Wilkie stopped Chandel Marie Riley. Sounds decidedly like a woman. Suspecting that the window tint on her car was too dark. Oh, dear God. By the end of their encounter, Wilkie and Riley were discussing religion, which led to the deputies baptizing the suspect in a lake. Wilkie led plaintiff into the near waist-deep and frigid water, placed one hand on plaintiff's back and the other hand on plaintiff's breasts, and completely submerged plaintiff under the water. Wilkie held plaintiff under the water for several moments, then with his hands still positioned on her back and breasts, raised plaintiff from the cold water. And it was all captured on video by another deputy. Now, Wilkie apparently had a cop from the had a lawyer from the cop union and claimed immunity from prosecution. The court writing, Wilkie purports to concede White's version of the facts, but the arguments made in his appeal demonstrate that his concession is a concession in name only. A few examples suffice. For White's Fourth Amendment unreasonable seizure claim, the district court, citing Riley's deposition testimony, concluded that a genuine fact dispute existed as to whether a reasonable person in Riley's position would have felt free to leave her in interaction with Wilkie, enabling a jury to find that Wilkie seized her for purposes of the baptism. Rather than truly conceding White's version of the facts, however, Wilkie offers more testimony from Riley to show the full context of just how voluntarily Riley thought this interaction was. Further, Wilkie summarily refers to the facts to explain why, in his view, he was justified in thinking that he was engaging in a wholly private affair with Riley. This argument makes either a competing inference or a credibility determination, neither of which grants us jurisdiction over his interlocutory appeal. And then, Wilkie took it on the chin in another case, also before the Sixth Circuit. This one brings into play one Deputy Bobby Brewer, who was also pulling someone over for window tinting being too dark. This sounds like, I don't know, pattern and practice? In this case, the people in the car were James Mitchell and Letitia Menifee. Wilkie handcuffed James, and the individual defendants took James to the front of one of their police vehicles. Wilkie then began to grab James's genitals. When James told Wilkie that James had an untreated and large hernia and that Wilkie's actions were causing James pain, Brewer and Wilkie jerked James's arms high above his back and slammed James face down onto the hot engine hood, causing injury to James. Wilkie and Brewer then beat James with fists, knees, and feet, slammed James to the ground, and continued their brutalization of James. Wilkie and Brewer then removed James's pants and shoes while still beating James. Wilkie and Brewer then forced James's face back onto the hot hood of the same police vehicle and continued to jerk his arms high above his back and beat James. While Brewer continued to force James's face back onto the hot hood of the same police vehicle and jerk his arms high above his back, Wilkie donned a set of gloves, pulled down James's underwear, and conducted an anal cavity search of James. Now, again, this is Tennistan. It is noteworthy that the city of Memphis, and we had this story last week, the city of Memphis moved to eliminate bullshit probable cause stops like window tint too dark. The Tennistan legislature then moved to pass a bill in both houses that would invalidate the new rules, the new ordinances, statutes passed by the city of Memphis. This is not in the city of Memphis. But it's indicative of how Tennistan and the maggot government there views police misconduct, police brutality, police sadism. And they're okay with it. And let's see. The offense that provided probable cause to arrest Mitchell, possession of about a gram of marijuana, was not particularly severe. It's a Class A misdemeanor in Tennistan. Ms. Mitchell didn't resist at all. I'm saying Mr. Mitchell. And this story has a happy ending, and the immunity was denied to both of the dirty deputies. But that's no help when you're in the middle of it all. Then there's the other case where Deputy Wilkie and another deputy abused and brutalized an individual and decided that his muscular dystrophy symptoms were sufficient probable cause to search his car. Again, a window tint violation. And then a claim that the police dog alerted on something in the car. No drugs were ever found. The cases are at least still alive, but they have yet to be resolved. Then there's Spruce Pine, North Carolina, Stan. Again, don't call the cops. Don't be sick in front of the cops. Spruce Pine, North Carolina, where a man named Dylan Ledford had stopped at the Walmart and called and told his loved ones that he was pulling over because he was going into hypoglycemia. I know what that's like. It's not good. He was so far into his hypoglycemia that Ledford has no memory of what happened. But he told his girlfriend that he was stopping at Walmart in Spruce Pine because his blood sugar was low. The surveillance camera shows him parking in Walmart's online shopping area. In the period of about 8 minutes, he goes into the store, comes out of the store, gets in his car, and 40 minutes later, he's still in the car. At which point, again, don't call the cops. Employees at the Walmart called the cops and said he's got big buggy eyes and isn't answering anybody and is twitching. Well, it only took the cops about 12 more minutes to reach Mr. Ledford. And after those 12 minutes, once they arrived, 4 minutes later, they were dragging a man in a hypoglycemic crisis out of his car. Beat him. And then tased him. His girlfriend, Linda McIntosh, said, "When people started to explain to me what they seen, I was like, hold on." Mercifully, there is surveillance footage that shows these pigs doing exactly what they did. They never called paramedics. They never made any effort to ascertain the health or well-being status of Mr. Ledford. An expert in law enforcement cruelty from the University of South Carolina stand said if they used the taser in a situation where the motorist was not a threat of physical harm or he was not apparently trying to get hurt or trying to hurt the officers or another person in some way, yes, that could be, could be excessive. Could be. And then after he stops punching, his legs come in once or twice. I can't tell on the video whether he's actually kicking or kneeing the person or not, the expert said. I can tell from the video those sure look like punches or some kind of potentially open hand or closed hand strikes. I can't tell from the video which it is. Whether that's excessive or not really depends on a couple of factors. One, is it a closed hand strike or open hand strike? And the other is, where is he hitting the individual? Well, Jesus, how was he dressed? Did the cop have at least 1 foot on the ground? There was, of course, no video or no audio with the video. And when the when ABC 13 News requested the report of investigation, it came back covered up in black Sharpie. Ultimately, this man who was in a hypoglycemic crisis, yeah, they handcuffed him behind his back and put him face down on the ground. And one of the officers kneels on him, appears to, and appears to have his hand on his back. I wonder if the Walmart workers realized when they were calling the cops that they were consigning this man to a literal hell on earth. No telling. Oh, by the way, funny place names. Billable Rick says, let's not forget Walla Walla, Washington. Oh, absolutely not Walla Walla, Washington, Billable. And it features in one of my favorite novels of the early 80s, Still Life with Woodpecker by Tom Robbins. Tom Robbins saying it means water and lots of it. Oh, that's wild. Darlene just sent this along. Another ship losing power on the way out of a harbor. This one in the port of New York in New Jersey. The APL Qingdao. That's strange. And of the cop stories, the bad cop stories that we have, this one is probably the most horrifying of the present batch. The story comes from Agence France-Presse. It goes back to last week. The story begins in September 2022. Officers in San Bernardino County engage in a chase with a car being operated by one Anthony Graziano, who has his 15-year-old daughter, Savannah Graziano, in the passenger seat with him. A California Highway Patrol helicopter captured video of the chase, and just the Friday before Easter, Good Friday, the CHP released the video and the video details the horror that then unfolded. 15-year-old Savannah Graziano gets out of the car and is walking toward an officer. On another recording, the officer can be heard calling her over. And then the CHP helicopter sends audio. The girl's out. The girl's out. All right. Girl's out, guys. The female is out. She's on the passenger side. Her daddy had taken the wrong way on a ramp and wound up, you know, in some scrub. 15-year-old Savannah Graziano crouches on the ground for a few seconds, and then she gets up and walks toward the police. And a cop saying, come to me, come, 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 walk, walk, walk. And then the gunfire stops as the other cops begin to waste her. And the cop yells, hey, stop, stop shooting her. He's in the car. And then there's more gunfire. San Bernardino County Sheriff Coroner described it and said, you can hear him calling her over and telling other deputies that the person who exited the truck was the passenger for them to stop firing, but it was too late. 15-year-old Savannah Graziano was pronounced dead at the hospital. Her father was pronounced dead at the scene. Her father was a complete asshole. He had multiple weapons in the pickup truck. He had body armor in the pickup truck. He had hundreds of rounds of ammunition. And, of course, the cops' names have not been released. The California Department of Justice is investigating. And the San Bernardino Sheriff's Office, under Sheriff Shannon Dickus, said, my hope is that this video will be watched in its entirety and provide insight into the unfortunate events that unfolded that day. I would ask the public to allow the DOJ to complete its independent investigation before reaching a conclusion. Well, I know that's okay, Sheriff Dickus. The public can reach a conclusion. The conclusion to be reached is that cops blew away an innocent 15-year-old little girl. The San Bernardino, California Sheriff's Department apparently has a killing kids problem. Because it was just a few weeks ago that the San Bernardino, California Sheriff's Department wasted a 15-year-old neurodivergent boy who was having a mental health episode. According to the Washington Post, more than 1,100 people in the United States have been blown away by cops all over the country in the last year. But you can't really get a handle on what the official numbers might be because, well, cop departments don't have to report the number of people that they kill to the federal government. Don't call the cops. Jesus. Any given day, we could have a bunch of these. Not to change the subject, Tom in sunny San Rafael says. But I didn't want to let today pass without noting in memory of Scott that today is Tom Lehrer's 96th birthday. I'm a Lehrer fan too. Oh, Tom, thank you for remembering that, and thank you for remembering Scott. Same here, also a Tom Lehrer fan. A little bit of good news. And by the way, we are $156 away from being fully funded for yesterday. If we could get fully funded for yesterday, that would make life considerably simpler. As well, it's bill paying, and I'm trying to come up with travel money for my appointment next week. And that's important. But like I said, a little bit of good news. Do you remember the names of Jacob Wohl and Jack Berkman? I know it seems like a million years ago, but what it was 4 years ago. They were right-wing assholes. Maggot assholes who thought themselves clever, and they decided, this is just another instance of election interference, and it would be fun to actually chase down the trail or connect the dots and find out where the real marching orders came from. But Jacob Wohl and Jack Berkman have been sued over and over and over again because of their maggot chicanery in which they tried to suppress the vote. In particular, New York Attorney General Letitia James got involved, as well as the National Coalition on Black Civic Participation and a bunch of other plaintiffs. And last month, Wohl and Berkman were found liable for having violated multiple federal and state laws. This was all published in the Daily Beast. Their particular focus was to try to scare away black voters and keep them from going to the polls. In a statement, Letitia James said, "The right to vote is the cornerstone of our democracy, and it belongs to everyone. We will not allow anyone to threaten that right." Well, with the entry of the judgment, Wohl and Berkman conceded a $1.25 million judgment to the Attorney General and the aforementioned plaintiffs. Letitia James went on and said, Wohl and Berkman orchestrated a depraved and disinformation-ridden campaign to intimidate black voters in an attempt to sway the election in favor of their preferred candidate. You know, the one whose clock she's already cleaned and whose shit she's about to take away. Now they'll pay up to $1.25 million to my office, the National Coalition on Black Civic Participation, and the individuals who were harmed by their scheme. My office will always defend the right to vote. And the consent decree that they signed on to says that it remains in full force and effect for 8 years. Neither Wohl nor Berkman may violate any laws. Specifically mentioned were the Klan Act of 1871, the Civil Rights Act of 1957, and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. The consent order says defendants shall refrain from knowingly creating, sponsoring, or transmitting any robocall or other mass communication that would intimidate or deter voters from voting by any method in any election. Defendants shall refrain from knowingly creating, sponsoring, or transmitting any robocalls or other mass communication containing any false or fraudulent information concerning voting, the right to vote, or the conduct of elections. They have to pay at least $105,000 by the end of the year, and if they don't, after 30 days of not doing that, the penalty goes to $1.25 million. It was 2018 when Berkman and Wohl tried to assert that Robert Mueller was a rapist. And then they tried to assert that Elizabeth Warren was a sex-crazed cougar. A veteran of the Marine Corps is also suing them, claiming they ruined his life by defaming him and accusing him of being a child predator. God, these are like the proto-Chaya rat chicks, aren't they? I wonder when something like this will happen to her. But she's only stochastically encouraging people to call in bomb threats and threaten the lives of people who work at Planet Fitness or places like Boston Children's Hospital or Vanderbilt Hospital. Yeah. But along the same lines as Wohl and Berkman, and this gives me some pleasure, we have a WeWake Ramalama Ding Dong sighting. This story is a couple of days old. Five days. So the time frame mentioned in the story has come and gone. The case arises out of federal court in Ohio, and the judge there has given WeWake Ramalama Ding Dong 3 days to tell the court all the gory details about his robocall activities while he was running his skeevy, dodgy presidential campaign. WeWake is, of course, saying that, I don't have enough time to fight the order. Had enough time to do the robocalls, though. He was supposed to have turned everything over by last Friday. And he's being sued, Ramalama Ding Dong is, by a man in New Hampshire who said that the robocalling was illegal. And WeWake Ramalama Ding Dong hired a dialing company. We talked about this a little bit a few weeks ago. There are just companies who do this skeevy shit. The federal magistrate court ordered WeWake Rosanna Dana to reveal the identity of the dialer company. And I've not yet seen that he has. And his pettifogger, some dude named Conover, said,
"Well, Mr. Ramaswamy desires to move with the speed necessary to bring the matter before the court quickly, while also being cognizant of the magistrate judge order of Mr. Ramaswamy to provide the identity of the dialer provided by Friday."
Provider. Now, that does not require, I mean, he knows who he hired.
Without the stay, Mr. Rosanna Dana is left with a Hobson's choice. He desires to object to the magistrate judge's order requiring him to identify the dialer provider by Friday. But absent a stay, he must comply with the magistrate judge's order and identify the dialer provider by Friday, lest he be found in contempt of the order.
I don't think that's what Hobson's choice means. But Pettifogger Conover said,
"Oh, it's arguably First Amendment protected political speech. Campaign call logs and lists."
Wrong accent, I know.
He said, "My client first appeared in this case just 2 days ago by filing a motion to dismiss for lack of standing, failure to join the correct party, and failure to state a claim."
Because, see, the whole robocall thing was a fraud. They invited people to take part in a teleforum town hall, and they'd be connected if they just stayed on the line or pressed 1. And then when they stayed on the line, a recording of WeWake Ramalama Ding Dong came online and began to harangue whoever answered the phone for votes. And so Thomas Grant of New Hampshire is suing and says that WeWake had violated the no consent class and is calling for up to $1,500 in damages for every violation. He said he got at least 8 of the robocalls to his personal cell phone between July and October 2023. And what happened when he picked up the phone, he said, a voice would say that they were from Ramaswamy's campaign and that a telephone town hall is currently taking place, and stay on the line and you'll be automatically connected to this unique opportunity to talk with WeWake and ask questions. But that didn't happen, because instead the robocall cut over to a recording of Rosanna Dana saying, "Communist China for our modern way of life anymore. I will tell you in January of 2033 that we no longer apologize for success. That we no longer..." And then the guy hung up. The suit also contains statements from other people who got the same call. God. I sincerely hope it doesn't hurt too little. I confess I'm still waiting to see the news cross that they've killed that man in Missouri. Oh, and Greg Asbot, we all know him, the governor of Texas, is threatening to go to war. With the federal government. He went on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda not long back and said, "Let me foreshadow also another concern we're going to have really soon. It's already kind of beginning right now, and that's going to be drone wars. The capability of the cartels about getting things cross-border through drones already is extraordinary, and they're going to be more aggressive, more sophisticated in the drone attacks." Asbot said, "It's ridiculous that anybody has their shoes inspected in an airport these days when terrorists can come right across the border and sneak in and come here." That was one of the funnier aspects of yesterday evening's Daily Show, was the clip of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda saying that Texas authorities were worried that the 4.5 minutes of totality would allow ample opportunity for drug smugglers and illegals to come pouring across the border in 4.5 minutes. John Stewart pointing out, or they could, you know, just wait till night. So at some point in time, Greg Asbot is hoping for a shooting war. Yeah, you know, with the United States of America. These people. Oh, and earlier today, Justice Cynthia S. Kern in the New York Appeals Court denied Nitwit Nero's motion to pretty please not put him on trial for the hush money and election interference because he's busy appealing a limited gag order. And his pettifoggers, who are no better than the other pettifoggers, said the gag order needs to be revoked because Orange Julius Geezer wants to publicly respond to witnesses Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels. No, that's what the courtroom's for. They said he also wants to talk about Judge Juan Merchan's daughter, employed at a political consulting firm. No. Prosecutor Stephen Wu said that the gag order needed to stay right where it was because of the well-established history of Nitwit Nero to attack witnesses and court personnel. Wu said, "There has already been difficulty in finding witnesses in our case. They've delayed bringing this request for 2 full weeks after the order was brought by the judge." Then went on to cite the attacks that have already happened. So Justice Kern quickly dismissed the motion, but it will be heard on Monday, April the 15th, you know, the same day that he goes to trial in the underlying hush money case in the first place. Seems like the courts are just constantly busy with this ongoing criminal enterprise. Out in Missouri, Stan, a circuit judge there named Christopher McDonough ordered unsealed a lawsuit by State Representative Justin Hicks against Max Calfo, who is running against Hicks for his seat in the Missouri House, and Lindy Williford, Calfo's campaign treasurer. Hicks sued back in September. He was getting ready to seek re-election for his district. Calfo was going to challenge him in the, of course, maggot primary. Then Hicks changed from a new term in Jefferson City, the capital of Missouri, to running for the 3rd District congressional seat that representing Blaine Lutkemeyer was vacating. People get so nasty. Calfo has a page on his website called The Truth About Justin Hicks. And on that subpage, tab, whatever, are a are records from a 2010 St. Louis County adult abuse case. In it, Hicks signed on to a consent decree that forbade him from having contact with a woman who had said that he grabbed her by the neck and choked her. The case was resolved in June of 2011 and sealed on Hicks's motion in 2021. And today, the judge, or not today, but on Friday, the judge said, nope, sorry, neither Calfo nor Williford had anything to do with the 2010 case, nor were they subject to any court order requiring them to keep any documents or information pertaining to the St. Louis County case confidential. And so he ordered it unsealed. Calfo, again, there are no heroes in this case. It's all maggots. I'm glad that Lindy and I have been vindicated. I should not have been sealed, and I'm optimistic we'll see a resolution this spring. Meanwhile, Hicks is probably dead in the water because there's 7 other candidates in the GOP primary. 2 of them are former state senators. Here's the good part. At least a Democrat's running against Calfo, Susan Shumway of O'Fallon, Missouri. I know where O'Fallon is. Among other things, Calfo accuses Hicks of stolen valor, claiming that he was in combat. In fact, on his website, he says he's a combat veteran. Meanwhile, Calfo has done his homework and so says that, Hicks was posted to the United Arab Emirates. He was a human resources specialist. He was there for 10 months. Jesus. So, oh well. Calpo said, hey, releasing information on one's opponent's been done since the 1700s. It's as American as it gets. MAGA, y'all. Yeah. In this case, is more than a little bit disturbing. It's a lot disturbing. Oh, God, there it is. Jude just saw the news come through. Brian Dorsey has been killed by the state of Missouri. Jude said, he's been held since you brought this execution to our attention today, dear Robin. Quite a statement how the prison staff stood with him. Can only imagine what his staff are now enduring as they sought to have this stopped. Compassion still presents. And, of course, they horizontally crucified him. Missouri hasn't quite gotten around to suffocating people to death and making them flop for 20 minutes on end like they do in Alabama. He was pronounced dead at 6:11 p.m. They gave him a single-dose injection of pentobarbital. And, of course, our most puissant dread sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties said, kill him. If we had a chance, we'd kill him ourselves. But I'm sure Sammy Bad Breath Alito was like, I'd like to chew the flesh off his bones. He had a spiritual advisor with him. Brian Dorsey said in a written statement, words cannot hold the just weight of my guilt and shame. Most importantly, I think, beyond the life of those Brian Dorsey killed, beyond the life of Brian Dorsey himself, is the fact that our most puissant dread sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties, despite the law of the state of Missouri, the rules of professional conduct, and despite the pronouncements of the American Bar Association, wow, Supreme Court said it was okay to go ahead and kill him, even though he had shitty lawyers and a shitty defense, and some of the evidence was never even presented that might have exculpated him. Celebrating the death, MAGOT Governor Mike Parsons said that Dorsey punished his loving family for helping him in a time of need. His cousins invited him into their home where he was surrounded by family and friends, then gave him a place to stay, and Dorsey repaid them with cruelty, inhumane violence, and murder. Missouri will kill another individual on the 11th of June. Death penalty cases are those cases that where hard cases make bad law. I generally do not support the death penalty. Because I don't think that killing someone who has killed others does a damn bit of good. I'd rather them sit there in prison for the rest of their lives and think about what they did, and perhaps even have a chance to rehabilitate themselves as Brian Dorsey did. But, of course, these are Christians we're talking about, you know, Mike Parson and the like. So, you know, they're all for the killing. You know, Jesus suffered on the cross. He can get horizontally crucified for all we fucking care. And make me no mistake, we don't care. Thanks for letting me know, Jude. No, this case is disturbing. Comes out of California. This is a real pisser. There's a U.S. District Judge, Cormac J. Carney. Let's go ahead and do the basic research on this. Because it may shed some light on why the judge did what he did. Cormac J. Carney. Yeah, there he is. 64 years old. United States District Judge for the United States District Court for the Central District of California. Yeah, of course. He's a dim leader appointment. That means before he's pre-maggot, so he's probably, you know, paleo-conservative, whatever the shitheads were calling themselves back then. Last week, Cormac J. Carney sentenced an individual in his courtroom who confessed in court that he beat a journalist at a 2017 white supremacist rally. He also pled guilty to violating anti-riot laws. Well, what did he do? He gave him 35 days in the clink, Cormac J. Carney did. And he wrote a sentencing memo. And this is disgusting. He said that he gave this right-wing piece of shit such a light sentence because sentencing Mr. Laub to additional incarceration would only increase the disparity between his punishment and the lack of punishment and prosecution of members of far-left groups who have committed the same violent conduct received. In other words, he let this white supremacist asshole walk with only 35 days because he didn't feel like he'd gotten to do shitty things to the Antifa. Jesus. There's only one problem, though. In state court at the same time, the same day that the white supremacist got a sweetheart deal and a kiss from Judge Carney in Santa Ana, 89 miles away, the single largest ever prosecution of members of Antifa was going to trial in San Diego. the Antifa members were prosecuted for violence against maggots in January of 2021. Some of those individuals, having already been convicted, are looking at years in state prison. And just in case anybody's wondering, this Solon stepped down as chief judge of the Central District of California back in 2020, and this probably has as much to do with his sentencing of the white supremacist as anything else. After he issued a public apology to Kiri K. Gray. Kiri K. Gray had for 35 years been a federal court employee, and she was the first black woman in 2015, the first black woman to be appointed to the Central District's executive and clerk of court. That involves working closely with the chief judge, who would be this white supremacist in question. And, apparently Carney wasn't crazy about the idea. Now, Carney, of course, came from Orange County Superior Court. Things become clearer now. After the police murder of George Floyd, well, Carney participated in a webinar on June the 9th, sponsored by the local chapter of the Federal Bar Association. And Carney was deeply aggrieved by graffiti and protests in the wake of the murder of George Floyd. And Carney said, "It's been sad, quite frankly, seeing our courthouses vandalized with graffiti." And then as he began talking about his elevation to chief judge, he said, "Well, fortunately for me, we have just a fabulous clerk of the court in Kiri Gray. She's so street smart and really knows her job." If Tracy were here, she'd say, "And she clean, too." And then this old privileged white man from Orange County said, "Well, to me, the term street smart means a person of great common sense, initiative, and ability to work with people and get things done. It saddened me greatly to learn that some people view the term to be demeaning to people of color. I never knew there was a different definition of the term." But then he didn't, for a noted jurist like Carney, he wasn't very good at the first law of holes. When you're in one, stop digging. And he said, "In a moment of anger and frustration, I said to Ms. Gray that the people criticizing me were equating my intended use of the term street smart with the reprehensible conduct of a police officer putting his knee on a person's neck." Oh, shut up. Two-tier justice system. But he finally found his revenge for having to apologize and step down as chief judge. By taking it out on the victim of a white supremacist who beat him. And giving the white supremacist just 35 days in jail. You know, if we had a functioning Congress, but why do I bother? That man would be at least censured, if not removed from the bench. Probably got a little football brain. Carney was apparently a wideout for the UCLA Bruins and an academic All-America and an All-Pacific, All-Pac-10 conference football player in 1981 and 1982, and was on the field when UCLA beat Michigan in the 1983 Rose Bowl. He even played in the USFL for the Memphis Showboats. Few too many blows to the head. I guess that can bring out the racist in you. Well, that's the program for this evening. Oh, didn't mean to do that. Sorry for the untoward noise. Thanks to all of our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thank you to our challenge makers. Thanks to Ralphs and Charlene and Clarence this evening. Thank you so much. We got down to $456 to go. Tomorrow we'll be at $756. And for the overnight crew, if you'd like to help us finish off Monday, that would be tremendous and profound, and I'd sweat the bills a little bit less. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this little long-running, more than two decades old conversation in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Roger in the chat room, and congratulations on the good news. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Please like each episode. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave a comment here and there. It really does help. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiteroadsociety.org. The reminder continues. If there's anything you want to get, and there's still a good bit there, if there's anything you want to get from White Rose Society, get it before June 1st, because on June 1st, the whiteroadsociety.org will be no more. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Find out when your next booster comes around. Wear your mask if you're around the maggots. Because, well, they've been known to spread disease. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance. And if Judge Carney comes towards you down the sidewalk saying, well, I needed to give him less time because Antifa's only going to prison for years. Yeah. Avoid Judge Carney like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Wayne and Gina, it's all for you. Later.